All right, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to DEEB. As a reminder, this meeting is being recorded and the audio will be on the DEEB's website. I will call the meeting to order. I'm Sherry Jones with the Southwest Washington Contractors Association.
Andrew Gunther with PLS Engineering.
Ryan Wilson with Wilson Architects.
Eric Galimo, SGA Engineering.
Brent Davis, Community Development.
Nicole Pizik, Community Development.
Houston Aho, Aho Construction.
And online we have
Jeff Riston, Kingston Homes.
Dan Weisner, Songbird Homes.
Jamie Housley, Jordan Ramos.
Jennifer Reynolds, Clark County Development Engineering.
Teresa Hardy.
Susan Ellinger.
Community Planning.
Thanks, Bart. Susan Ellinger, Community Planning.
Jenna Kay, Community Planning.
Amy Wooten, Community Planning.
I don't know that we heard from everyone online.
This is Councillor Young. I'm just here to listen today.
Jack,
Justin Wood, Clark County Association of Realtors.
Okay, anyone else online that we've missed? I think that might have been everyone. We've had two more people join us.
Max Booth, Chief Building Official. I'm late.
April Firth, Director of Community Development.
Great, thank you, everybody. Did everyone get a chance to review the minutes?
I did, and move to adopt.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Thank you. I know Megan couldn't be here today, but do we have anyone to review upcoming events on her behalf? No? Upcoming events. She usually goes over upcoming planning commission meetings, that type of thing. No. It looks like on our agenda we do have county council meeting listed for September 19th, as well as October 3rd, and some council work sessions September 13th to go over the Clark County Aging Readiness Plan, September 20th, the planning assumptions and population allocation, and then on September 27th, the Legacy Lands Program.
Sounds like out of those, the September 20th would be something that we would be interested in.
I don't see any dates for upcoming Planning Commission in our packet. Do any members have member announcements? No. Okay. It's so quiet in here today. All right. Well, I guess we will just move on to our first agenda item, which is the biannual code update. And you're leading that? Perfect.
Yes. Yeah, so I don't have a formal presentation for you today. I just wanted to present the list of items and briefly cover what they're about. So there was a sheet in the packet that went out with the overview. So I'll go ahead and run down the list. And there's some of these are road standard, road modification oriented, and Jennifer is prepared to respond to any questions on those. And a couple of them are building and fire code related, and Max is here to address any questions about those. So a couple changes in our definition section of Title 40, adult family home definition. Our current code says it's for up to 6 residents. State law has exceptions that allow up to 8 residents. So we're just going to make sure that the definition is consistent. And then the next one, we have to revisit our definition of isolated wetlands. And this is because Ecology has given us a comment on our adopted shoreline amendments, which incorporated the critical areas ordinance that the council adopted at the same time. And we were unaware, and somehow Ecology missed it during the review process for those amendments and updates, that they have a different expectation in shoreline versus critical areas outside of shoreline for very small wetlands. In our critical areas ordinance, we're exempting those wetlands from buffer requirements and from mitigation sequencing, so you don't have to justify why you're filling those small wetlands. And Ecology's policy is they do not want those exemptions to apply in shoreline, and we were unaware of that. So before our shoreline amendment and CAO can go into effect, we need to change the definition of isolated wetlands to be consistent with that. And just to follow on that, we can expect then that our critical areas ordinance update is not going to become effective until after we adopt this correction through the biennial code process, and then Ecology goes through their final approval process. We already have buy-off from Ecology to make the change in this way, as opposed to reopening the shoreline amendment. All right, the next one, wireless communication facilities. We need to make some amendments to ensure that we're consistent with federal rules that prohibit local government from denying certain types of modifications to existing facilities, things like co-locates. There's certain criteria. If they meet them, the federal rules say that we cannot deny them. So we just want to make sure that's consistent. The next one is in the street and road standards. Scrivener's errors, clarification for deferral of frontage improvements, and then a correction for some code changes from the last biennial that apparently weren't correct. So if you have any questions about those, Jennifer can speak to that. And then we found some Scrivener errors in the critical areas ordinance that was adopted last March. So we're going to get those corrected, and hopefully they'll be corrected now before that goes into effect. The next one is changing the radius for public notice from 300 feet to 500 feet in the urban areas, and from 500 feet to 1,000 feet in the rural areas. And that will be applied to type 2, type 3, and type 4 processes. Some changes to the type 2 procedure as well. We are wanting to require pre-applications for major home businesses. They're currently not required. And what we're finding is a lot of our major home businesses come to us through code enforcement. And what the landowners are doing on their property is way beyond what we can approve with a home business. And so they're coming in and applying thinking they're going to be able to get approval, and we haven't had a chance to have a conversation with them about what the limitations are and make them aware. So we're thinking that having them do a pre-app is a way to have that earlier communication. And all right. And then some revisions in the site plan review code. There's a SEPA reference that isn't consistent with the WAC for storage tanks that we need to correct. We realize there's some clarification that we can make to make it clear how the site plan exemption applies to duplexes and triplexes. There's currently some confusion with that. And then the next one is signature requirements for final site plan, final construction plan approval. Essentially, the code requires certain staff to sign those, and we're currently doing that digitally by indicating via email or our project doc system that we approve them for signature. So they just want to change the code to make that procedure consistent. So, and the next one is for final site plans. And it's essentially the same issue for construction plan approval and final plat, or I'm sorry, it's for construction plan approvals and anyway, I'll just leave it at that for now. The next one is some changes to the road modification section that again are making corrections to some errors from the last biannual code update. And then lastly, for Title 40, we want to clarify in the provision that allows deferral of impact fees, that responsibility for payment of the recorded documents is on the applicant. The language isn't very clear right now, but that is the intent.
Terry Wall
is now joining.
And then outside of Title 40, we're proposing a change to building code. The exceptions from the scope of the applicability of the building code to remove the exception for agricultural structures to be consistent with the State Building Council, State Building Code Council. And then an amendment to the fire code to clarify requirements for security key boxes that we have not enforced for a number of years. Any questions?
So we don't have any draft language for any of these yet. This is just the list.
Yeah, we have some draft language, but we'll be coming back to the complete package. I'll be after this, I intend to schedule a work session with council to and have the code drafted by that time to present to them, and then we'll bring it back to you before we go to Planning Commission.
Are ag buildings held to the same code standards as like regular structures, or does the State Building Code Council have like ag building standards that aren't being reviewed now?
I think Max will.
Yeah, I can answer that. The State Building Code has provisions for buildings that have a lower risk category than regular buildings, and ag buildings would fall into that lowest risk category. But they don't have like a special lane for just ag structures that's fundamentally different than a regular building. It becomes an unheated accessory structure type thing, which is as simple as it gets, and then also does have a lower risk category, which means the design criteria isn't as stringent. So
typically ag buildings are on residential lots. They're like a barn next to somebody's house, like a
right.
horse barn or something.
Mm-hmm.
So you would use the IRC then mm-hmm. for that?
It'd be, in that scenario, yes, it'd be an accessory to the residence, which would be built by the IRC, provided it's less than three stories and all the rest of that stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
So, not to say you couldn't use the IBC. That's always an option.
Yeah.
But most people default the IRC in such a scenario. We have had structures built like that were built with the IBC because someone wanted to make use of some provision in there. When buildings get sprinkled in the IBC, there's kind of get-out-of-jail-free cards built in there that don't exist in the residential code, so.
Does the county have a process if there's an ag building that was built without a permit and the use changes?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a way to do that without having to go through all the retroactive permitting, which is quite very difficult to do?
There's nothing.
Is there like a safety like check or something that can.
Right. There's nothing formalized. So. But there is, some some thought put into how old's the building? How long's it been there? What's the use changing to? To what degree are we going to have to unravel this thing or unwind it? If this happens and the exemption for ag structures does come out, there wouldn't be some automatic blanket to do this. Legally established buildings are still legally established buildings, even if the code has changed years later. So, yeah, there's thought put into that, though. There's a difference between, you know, a house that was built with no permit with people living in it and the way that gets dealt with to get it brought up to current standards and, say, a patio cover or an old barn or whatever, depending on what it's being converted to. So, and we do deal with that sometimes now. I mean, ag buildings that are no longer ag buildings that people are trying to make into other things. You know, there's a, yeah.
I actually have a project like that now that it was built as an ag building for a tulip farm, and it's a marijuana processor who's in it now, but marijuana facilities in the Clark County are treated as industrial. So they have to turn it into a commercial property. So we're have to turn an ag building into a commercial building, which is difficult.
Yeah, marijuana is exempt from the ag exemption.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not a home-based business. just poking there. A major home business problem.
Any other questions at this point?
Do you have a schedule yet on likely adoption on these? Or?
Well, as I said, I'm after this meeting, I'm going to submit a request for a work session, hopefully in October, and then that will drive the process moving forward. If council is completely receptive, we'll take it forward as quickly as we can, and we'll get on Planning Commission as quickly as we can. We'll probably be looking towards the end of the year, which could be challenging with schedules and the number of hearings that Planning Commission is holding in that time frame. But I would anticipate, if all goes well, we'll be early in 2024.
Any other questions, comments?
My only thing, I have a list of the upcoming Planning Commission, if you wanted me to give them really quick.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful. Thank you.
So work session, it doesn't say what they're about, but work session on 9/7 at 5:30. Work session on 9/13 at 9 a.m. We're public hearing 9/21 at 6:30 p.m. And I think that's it. Oh, wait, I mixed two. No, Planning Commission work session 9/7, Clark County Council work session 9/13, Planning Commission public hearing on 9/21, and then Clark County Council hearing on 9/26.
Thank you. All right, so thank you for that update. Moving on, we have community planning updates. Is Jose here?
I think Jose might not have been feeling well today.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. This is Sullivan. Let me see if one of my staff is available. Bud Cushing, who will just quickly update Dave. We are in the process at the direction of council to update or amend our impact fee code to provide for fire assessment of fire impact fees. So I don't know if Bart is online, but take it from here. So just want to
Oliver, I think they had a agenda item for like a more general community planning update. There may have been some miscommunication. The bullet points they have, if you don't have the agenda in front of you, are VBLM overview, outcome of the August 1st council hearing on the employment forecast, housing, and then we move to the aging readiness plan, and then fire fees at the end of the meeting.
Okay. Quickly, thank you, but I don't have the agenda in front of me. On the vacant buildable lands model work session with council, that was held August 30th. Briefly, I thought the work session went very well. This is an attempt just to provide an overview of how the vacant buildable lands model works, how we use it as a tool for planning, and then what is new in terms of how we are going to be running the model going forward. Some of you are familiar with the House Bill 1220 that requires counties and cities now to look at our land that are available for development, if you will, particularly on the residential side, and show what the potential is based on zoning. Historically, we have been running the vacant buildable lands model based on the general land use plan or the comprehensive plan designation, and running that based on coming up with from gross to net and applying our target densities, 8 for Vancouver, 6 for the smaller cities, and none for the town of Yercaud, and 4 units an acre overall for the city of Lucenta. So now we are going to shift to running the model based on zoning. That, in addition to what House Bill 1110 requires, for example, the city of Vancouver, and I believe Commerce, and I think Washougal is included in that. For the 1110, they now should be able to allow up to 6-plex and 4-plex in their single family zone based on zoning. So the next time we run the model is going to be based on zoning and what the planned densities will be now that the legislature have asked that single family district be opened up to allow for other housing types. So that is what will be new as we run the model going forward. In terms of the employment forecast or projection, we received that from Scott Bailey at the Employment Security Department. As you all know, we don't receive employment projection from the state, unlike population numbers. So based on the population numbers that the county have already made decision on, Scott Bailey used that population to provide us his best estimate of what the employment forecast would be from 2025 to 2045, and that was based on a very aspirational job to housing ratio of 1-to-1. So the council approved that. I believe that was approved sometime in August. I cannot remember the exact date, or before, or maybe in July. I have to look back and find out when that was done. Moving forward, as it relates to the periodic update, we are now going to be coordinating with our local jurisdictions to come up with what the planned densities will be, given the fact that the county has to comply with House Bill 1220, and some of the cities will also have to comply with 1220 and the 1110 that is more specific to cities. Not all the cities in Clark County are subject to the 1110 bill, but as their population increases in the future, they will be subject to the requirements of 1011. You all can have, feel free to read the bill and see what it says. Now it's not encouraged, it is planned for. and we are going to be held making sure that our planning update complies with all the new housing bill that the legislature passed. I just mentioned the two that are very critical. We also are required to plan for, provide for housing in various income bands. That is not unique to Clark County. That is also what all the cities within the county are supposed to do. So that is where we are. Hopefully we will have a new model run sometime in October. When that is run, we will provide that to our cities and make that available to the public so that at least we can agree on what the capacity is before we think about how we're going to deal with the need. In addition to that, I believe that some of you may be familiar with the spreadsheet that, or the guideline that the Department of Commerce is providing to counties and cities that we have to use in how we do the allocation of housing unit to cities within that same income band. So we are having conversation with the Department of Commerce, making sure that what we are going to do to the best that we can is consistent with the guideline that Commerce is providing us. We're also beginning now to engage in work relating to the climate bill. I think we have mentioned to Deeb in the past that the legislature also passed the climate bill. There are two sub-elements to that. One is reduction in our greenhouse emission. Included in that is also looking at vehicle mile traveled, and then resilience plan, which is another sub-element. And Jenna Kerr, excuse me, is our lead staff on the climate bill. That is going to be very challenging. We have a very short timeline to complete that work and have it be part of the periodic update due on or before June 30th, 2025. So that is all I have. And I know Susan can talk about the aging readiness plan update. That was completely revamped, and another chapter was added to the current plan. And that went to the Planning Commission. That work was done with the help of a consultant, and we are very pleased with the work that they've done. The Planning Commission recommended approval unanimously, and we will be having a work session with council and then schedule a hearing when the council will review that and approve that. That is all I can add as it relates to the aging readiness plan. And there will, you know, if you have questions, please let me know. I can tell you that project that we have completed, and I know Jenna Kay is here as well as other staff to answer questions. Ecology is still providing us some comment on our shoreline and critical area ordinance. So we will make the necessary changes, and hopefully that will go into effect as soon as Ecology approves that. That's all I have. If you have questions, let me know before we go to the fire impact fee that we are working on amending our code to provide for. So I will stop there and take any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Oliver. That was a great update. I think there was one other bullet, if you don't mind touching on, which was the housing option study and action plan, phase one.
Thank you.
Provide an update.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. we went to council following the Planning Commission recommendation. Council had their hearing, but a lot of issues were raised from, I would say, from the development community, and the council wanted us to respond to those concerns that were raised. And what we have done, I think some of you that attended the hearing, the council were to submit their questions to staff, and they have done so. We are reviewing those questions. Majority of the questions are, you know, right off what the building industry questions were. So we have compiled them as we received them from council. We are going to be meeting with our consultant, and at some point we will restart a conversation through the focus group to address or come up with how to address those concerns raised. Some of them may lead to clarification. Some of them may be, we will deal with them in the next phase. Some of them may be, here's how we are going to address them, or these are the recommended changes that we are proposing. But all that conversation will happen through the focus group. So stay tuned. You will be getting an invite when that group reconvene to address the concern and questions raised by our council. So that's where we are. Whether the meeting will start this month, I cannot tell you, but I would say watch out for a meeting invite for some of you that have were part of the team that went through the review of the code amendment relating to the housing project. That's it from me.
Wonderful. Thank you, Oliver.
You're welcome.
All right. So should we move in? Susan? Hi.
Hello. Are you able to see the presentation, or should I share my screen? Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Susan.
Okay.
From my own end, I'm having difficulty turning my camera on. So you guys can hear me, but may not see me. So I'm still working on it.
Okay. I'll just share my screen.
Yeah. Thank you, Susan.
Yeah. Okay. Can you see that? All right. Great. So we have a short presentation for you today that covers the project background, summarize the development related. I'm sorry. For the record, my name is Susan Ellinger. I'm with Community Planning, and I'm here today with Jenna Kay. We're both planners with Community Planning, and we help staff the Commission on Aging. So we have a short presentation for you today that covers the project background, summarizes the development-related strategies that we thought would be of interest to DEEB members, outlines next steps, and provides time at the end for any questions. So Clark County, as everywhere in the country, is anticipating a surge in the number of residents that are 60 or better. By 2035, 1 in 4 Clark County residents will be 60 or older. With the knowledge of this change coming our way, in 2012, the then Board of County Commissioners approved the Aging Readiness Plan and appointed a 9-member volunteer Commission on Aging. The existing Aging Readiness Plan has 5 chapters that include strategies to improve the community for older adults in each of these areas. The plan celebrated its 10-year anniversary in 2022, and commissioners felt that it needed an update to reflect changes since its adoption. The update includes the addition of a new health and safety chapter, focusing on emergency preparedness, a topic that is not currently covered. Additional details about implementation of the plan are also included, so progress can be monitored more easily. Excuse me. The update also refreshes the plan to address changes in the last 10 years and updates the data and maps in the document and ensures that new technologies and services are incorporated. So this timeline shows the major milestones for the project. It included significant public outreach that involved a community survey, meetings and focus groups with local experts, agency professionals and interested individuals, community workshops, and online input options. Through these various engagement opportunities, we heard feedback from more than 500 people who provided a combination of 425 survey responses and about 270 written comments. 74 people participated in 6 focus groups and 3 community workshops. The updated plan has 5 chapters that cover the 5 topics that are shown on this slide. And previously there was a chapter that covered supportive services, but that information was broken up throughout the plan. Each chapter has goals and strategies that meant to improve the community for older adults in each area. The goals and strategies are aspirational and do not include details of how they will be met. Excuse me. As the Commission on Aging works to implement those strategies, the details of those will be worked out. Most strategies contain things like programs to educate and provide information on resources or work with service providers that serve older adults like the Area Agency on Aging. And for those that are related to development, if they would include anything related to Title 40, code changes would be proposed before those could be implemented. As a part of the process, we met with the Building Industry Association and one of their members to incorporate their feedback on some of the strategies that are included in the plan after the release of the public review draft. All of their suggestions were incorporated into the Planning Commission version of the plan. As I mentioned earlier, we are sharing the development-related goals and strategies with you today. The first of those is included in the Healthy Communities chapter and addresses parks. These strategies focus on making parks accessible for older adults and everyone in the community. This includes things like building parks to universal design standards and increasing the tree canopy. The first goal in the housing chapter relates to providing a range of housing, including multi-generational options. Some of the strategies within this goal include ideas such as allowing assisted living facilities in the low-density residential zones, educating on multi-generational housing through events like the Building Industry Association home shows, and removing barriers to the development of smaller dwellings such as ADUs. The second goal in the housing chapter addresses aging in place for those that want to stay in their homes but need retrofits or other assistance to do so. Examples of strategies for this goal include incorporating universal design guidelines into the building code and providing incentives for building to those standards, such as the incentive program that exists in the city of Ridgefield. Other examples of strategies include increasing the number of certified aging in place specialists that can perform retrofits and educating and distributing informational resources regarding universal design standards and aging in place. The third goal in this chapter addresses affordable housing. Strategies support concepts like higher density and mixed use projects on underused properties, allowing small to medium multifamily and retail uses within the low density zones, and density bonuses near transit, healthcare, and retail locations. Moving on to mobility, the first goal in the mobility chapter supports the design of transit options to comfortably serve everyone in our community. This includes infrastructure improvements and transit solutions designed for older adults and those with disabilities, such as adding shelters, benches, lighting, and other amenities to transit stops. The second mobility goal addresses increasing alternative transportation options for those that are not well served by transit, including the rural areas of the county. This includes things like completing sidewalk and bike lane connections and developing ride sharing and scheduling programs. The third mobility goal supports the design of facilities to support safe walking and rolling options for all users and abilities to destinations like grocery stores, parks, and other important community resource areas. This incorporates strategies such as expanding complete streets, shortening block lengths, and filling sidewalks and ADA facility gaps. And finally, the fourth goal in the mobility chapter promotes design standards that encourage walking, rolling, and transit use. Strategies under this goal promote things like increasing pedestrian and bicycle infrastructure in new developments, especially along public transit corridors, and having entrances for commercial, medical, and recreational buildings close to the street. So next steps. We're nearing the end of the project. The update was considered in a public hearing by the Planning Commission on August 17th and recommended for approval. There is a work session included with the County Council on September 13th, and we have a hearing with County Council on September 26th. And as I mentioned earlier, the goals and strategies in the Aging Readiness Plan are high-level ideas and do not include specific information about how they will be implemented. Those that are related to development would necessitate code changes to Title 40, and they would. Those that are related to development would necessitate code changes to Title 40 if they were going to promote or possibly make any requirements for a development project. Those code updates would go through the regular adoption process, which would include future coordination with DEEB. So that's the end of our formal presentation, and we thank you for having us today. And I'm happy with Jenna to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Susan.
One question. H2.9, it says incentivizing visitable housing. That's not a phrase I'm familiar with. What is that?
Yeah, absolutely. To allow anyone in the community to be able to visit your house. And so it includes no-step entries, a bathroom on the first floor, and generally promotes ADA accessibility.
And this is Jenna. I would just add on to that. The idea is that not only could anyone get into your house and visit you, but it also sets you up that if at a point in your life, maybe going upstairs becomes really challenging, that you could convert your first floor into a livable space because you could access the bathroom, you had wide enough doorways, and could get in and out of the house. So it's sort of dual purpose that in those ways.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Susan. Thank you, Jenna.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Next on our agenda, we have fire impact fees.
Yeah. Hi, this is Bart Catching with Community Planning, and I'm going to try and share my screen here so I can just run through a quick PowerPoint. Can everybody see that okay?
Yeah, that looks good.
Okay, great. Thank you. Once you share your screen, I can't see anybody's faces, so you know how that is. Okay, so this PowerPoint I'm going to go through real quickly, but obviously any questions you have at the end, please feel free. And this is the same basic presentation that we're going to give to the Planning Commission at a work session this evening. We in community planning have been tasked by the council to move forward with the initial phases to implement impact fees for fire districts for their essential public facilities component of their operations. And as such, this is not adopting any fees themselves. This is just doing the code update work in Title 40 to create the framework, as I mentioned, for that. So there are not specific numbers involved. This is just the legal code aspect to move forward. Public facilities in general are eligible for a proportion of their funding to be done through development impact fees, as I'm sure all of you are aware. Currently, Clark County has impact fees for traffic and parks and schools. Those fees have been in place for decades in one form or another, but not, interestingly, for fire districts, which are also an essential public service with public facilities associated with them. However, the GMA and associated state statutes do allow fire districts to use impact fees if they meet the applicable regulations and criteria. So, as I just mentioned, at the request of County Council and some of the folks in the fire district world, we've been requested to start the work on the code updates and then the associated project tasks that will come along with that. So we are calling this project Fire District Impact Fees Code Update for lack of a more elegant title. And what this proposal at this stage on the front end will look like is changes to Clark County Development Code Title 40.6, which houses all the impact fee language for all of the different types of impact fees. So just this is a little summary table that helps us get a handle on what we're actually working on. We're going to have to add a definition for fire districts to include them as a public facility in the code. We're going to have to add a new section, presumably behind the schools section, because that's where it makes sense to create a procedure for the fire districts to impose their new impact fees. But essential to remember that the impact fees can't be adopted until the fire districts actually have a capital facilities plan in place, and none of them do. I'll mention that in more detail in a minute. We also need a new section that would house the calculation, the formula for the districts once they do adopt their capital facilities plan. So again, just like with schools and traffic, this is a little bit of algebra, and this will be posted on the Planning Commission documents if you want to take a look. And that is also a new section. 40.620060 is what we're thinking the number will be. And then also we will need to amend 630030 to include the fire impact fees and some code references there. And then finally, there's an aspect of this where in 630090, the fire districts will need to have their own paragraph about the interlocal agreement. So after the code updates happen, and then if a fire district went through the process and got a capital facilities plan adopted, then they would need to also work out a interlocal agreement with the county. The basic compliance that we need to look at to make this happen, at least for this initial code update portion, is to make sure that the request complies with the GMA and our comp plan. The operative section of GMA that drives this fundamentally is Goal 12, which is public facilities and services. So it's our responsibility as a GMA planning county to ensure adequate public facilities and services to serve development at minimum service levels. This has been implemented in our count plan, primarily in Chapter 6, Capital Facilities and Utilities, where there are certain policies and strategies. If you're interested in reading more detail about this, again, you can access the staff report in the Planning Commission materials that will be posted on the meeting website. But that's three different policies that address impact fees directly. And then there are some strategies as well that guide the work and promote this approach to fees. So we have a finding that adopting the development impact fees for fire districts is both allowed and appropriate under the GMA and the associated comp plan sections. But the GMA and the comp plan is not the end of it. In fact, the real nitty gritty for how this works under state code is in some WAC and RCW sections. Again, these are long detailed sections. Feel free to, dive into them yourselves. I've just put some high level highlights here to illustrate where we're focusing our analysis. And so Washington Administrative Code 365/196/850, this is where we have the direct authorization for counties to collect impact fees for public facilities. The fire is explicitly included in this list. So there is a three-part, it's not a test, it's just a set of criteria that need to be met. Again, this is the paraphrase that I have in here, but the system improvements that would be funded by fees need to be related to the new development. They need to be proportionate. So you're familiar with that whole concept from traffic fees, I'm sure. And then the system improvements would need to reasonably benefit the new development that is having the fees imposed on them. So again, this would be verified in more detail when a fire district brought in their capital facilities plan, but the initial code updates are mirroring the other well-established aspects in our code for traffic and schools and things. So we're not breaking any new ground with our proposed language here, just adding a new category, so to speak. Additionally, the revised code of Washington 820.02060 has several provisions that local ordinances that impose impact fees need to meet, talks about the details of what the fee schedule formula needs to look like, laundry list of factors, all that good stuff. And so again, because we're using other aspects of fees that are well established, like the school's fees, as a model for our language, we're not anticipating any major statutory roadblock, so to speak, with the language. So we're going to recommend a finding that the proposed code changes do meet the general criteria and standards found in the WAC and RCWs for impact fees. So generally, the gist of the staff report that we're getting to Planning Commission tonight for discussion at the work session is that the adoption of the fire impact fees and code updates would be in line with the impact fees for other public facilities that have been in place for a long time. The proposed fire impact fees code updates would comply with the GMA, the comp plan, the WAC, and the RCW, and we recommend approval of the code updates. Next steps are pretty straightforward at this point. We have the work session with PC tonight, as I mentioned, and then 2 weeks later we have our hearing and the 21st, and we haven't scheduled council work session or hearing yet, but given the direction that we've gotten, I'm assuming it would go as quickly as possible later this fall, but no dates yet. So with that, quick overview. Happy to answer any questions. And I'm thinking that Oliver is still online, maybe to answer anything that I can't handle. And I'm going to see if I can stop sharing my screen here now.
Thank you, but I'm still here.
Okay. So, any questions?
So, typically, impact fees are charged at the time that you pick up your building permit. So, I guess I'm just thinking, at what point in the pipeline, if this is like a next year implementation or something, or at what point would we know to let our clients know that there's a fee, a new fee, I guess, is what I'm trying to figure out.
So very good question. So the first part of your question, what I would say is, if you are familiar with the way the other fees are applied and assessed timing wise, again, like I said earlier, we are utilizing as much of the same code language as we can and just sticking it in for where there was a laundry list of parks, traffic, and schools, fire fees are going to be added. So there will be no surprise differences in language. The second part of your question, very glad you brought that up. Our legal counsel had asked me to remind everyone that even if we adopted these code changes to Title 40 tomorrow, there will be no assessment of any fire fees until a fire district submits a formal critical facilities plan, and that goes through the entire process. And so Planning Commission, Council, all the public hearings, all the public comments, and not only that, that is part of the comp plan. And so that would need to wait until the periodic update goes through. So we're not looking at any of these actually being effective until late 2025 at the very earliest.
Thank you, Bert, and a good question. And you answered it very well. There are about how many fire district in the county, about 9 or 6?
I think there's 7 that this would apply to.
Okay, thank you. That's what I thought. Unlike school, we have 9 school districts. So fire district in the entire county, there are some area in the county that doesn't have a fire district. So, but I think there are a total of 7, if not 8. As Bert indicated, they will have to, any of the fire district that wants to take this opportunity, if approved by council, will have to submit a capital facilities plan and the attendant fire impact fees, and that has to go through a hearing and through the hearing process, which we will share with the members. And before that goes in effect, we will let our community development staff know when to put that fee in their system and let everybody know that this is a new fee and so forth. But at this point, there are no fire districts that are submitting CFP and associated fire impact fees. So Bert is correct, it will take quite some time. They may do so, but they have to wait until the council approved the addition of fire impact fee to our impact fee code language before they can even start amending their CFP and submitting. Oh, the last thing I will add is, some of you are aware, I believe the city of Battleground and I believe the city of Washougal, they currently assess fire impact fees. So for some of you that develop in those communities, this is not new to you. So, but here in Clark County, we do not assess fire impact fee. This is going to change eventually in the future, but when, we don't know yet.
Thank you, Oliver.
You're welcome.
Any other questions?
Yes, more of a comment than a question. And as kind of a group, we've always looked at trying to create like a more affordable housing. So one thing that impacts do in general is they decrease affordability for new homes. And it puts a lot more of the burden for these capital facilities and for things that the entire community benefits from on the backs of new development, making it more expensive to increase the supply of housing, which then drives up things across the board. So not that it's not allowed or appropriate, but there are other impacts and I guess adverse impacts to consider as these plans go through with any impact fee, and that they're balanced with other competing interests like housing affordability and making sure that the system to fund these, the fire districts are fair to the entire community and that one group doesn't unfairly disproportionately handle the cost of those facilities.
Well, I'm sure Oliver will have something to add to this, but I would just say that if it makes you feel a little less quingy about this approach, there is a very detailed set of criteria that the capital facilities plans would need to meet before they ever got approved. And proportionality and the nexus of whether the fees are related to the development is at the top of the list in assessing those fees. And so much like a subdivision driving trips through an intersection where there is a lot of detailed analysis going through, well, these fire fees, even though they would be a more broad approach to be plugged into the formula, that proportionality for actually relating a particular fee to a particular development, whether it's a single family, a multifamily unit, or a commercial development, would be detailed and have a lot of public input for each district before it ever got adopted. I don't know, Oliver, anything you want to say about that?
No, you covered it very well, because the statutes that you cited touched about nexus and proportionality and all of that. So that is going to be part of the conversation. The issue that Eric is raising is one that is broadly recognized, that when you look at the cost of housing and permitting fee and system development charges, and which may not include, because system development charges is your water and sewer, and then you have impact fees, that all those costs has impact on affordability. I don't disagree. It's going to be more of a policy call on the part of decision makers on some of this we have done in the past, where take for example school districts. School district board have made a decision not to assess the maximum fee that they could have under the formula, and made a policy choice of what to assess. So that is what I will see going forward. Also bear in mind that in addition to proportionate share and nexus and all of that, you will agree, just as an observation which you made, that some of the fire districts, not all of them, some of them are really beginning to have difficulty passing bonds and levies. And the same is true if you look at historically, Barro Grande have had difficulty passing levies, and now we're experiencing that in Richfield. And I don't know what to say, but it's something that we have to, monitor and make a policy call, one word, the other word, the appropriate fee should be. It is part of the growing pains. That's all I can add. And this is editorial on my part, but I think that you answered the question very well, that we have to look at, the proportionate share and the nexus and all of that, and be able to And the fire district will do the same thing before they even submit their CFP and their tendered fee to us for review. They will consider that and come to a conclusion whether they will assess what the formula allows or whether they will make a different choice. So I would say stay tuned. We have made kind of like a policy call, and we consulted with the school districts. If you recall, we don't assess the full impact fee as you build ADU, for example. That was reduced by, I believe, 75%. So I don't know what, and before that was done, we reached out to the school districts to come on board. So it's more of a policy call and what local jurisdiction. They really don't have much to do when it comes to housing affordability. But let me just stop there. But you answered the question very well.
All right. Any other questions or comments? Okay. Thank you, Bart. Thank you, Oliver.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a note from Seth that Terry might have wanted to talk about something, and I know he wasn't here for member announcements. Terry, there was something for the county. What was it? Let me look. The freeze of recording of plats. Was there something you want to talk about on that? Is Terry still here?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry. So there was a note that I might be wanting to discuss something related to final plat. Is that what the comment was?
Yeah, it was related to the county freeze for processing. I don't know. He didn't give me a lot of info. He just said you had something to talk about.
Sorry. I would comment in regards to the fire impact fee, and I guess in general, and I understand that fees, you know, there's a period of time it takes, and this to come from different districts in regards to establishing what the fee amount would be. I think there needs to be, trying to be flexible to that. I think that if there's a range that could be tight, and let's say by tight, maybe that's within a $500 increment or even a $1,000 increment, that a minimum of a 6-month notice could be provided once that dollar amount is established or arranged, so that it allows for the time frame needed for budgets as it relates to whether it be multifamily or a commercial building, and just the financing time frame is, unfortunately, as everything takes longer, so does permitting, and that would be, to me, a kind of a minimum threshold on time that allows for those things to be budgeted appropriately within financing, and then it isn't an undue burden put onto a builder or developer. I'd also echo Eric's comments in regards to affordability, and we really need to be as vigilant as possible to look for funding mechanisms that are not going to add additional costs on the housing, which everyone across the board seems to be in agreement is an issue for having the affordable and attainable. So in regards to final plus, I apologize, I have a little bit of a blank on specifics, and so I'll come to the next meeting prepared to talk on that. So I'll follow up on that. Sorry about that.
No worries. Thank you, Terry. Looking at the email, it looks like your question was maybe we talk about the timing of the freeze.
Is that what it was? Or was I got
sorry.
A call.
Yeah,
from
I'm sorry. My email was related to, and this we may have already addressed this, it's just the freeze related to recording of items, and the freeze is related to processing things through the county. And if that could be adjusted to a different time frame. I believe we've had this conversation previously, so someone can feel free to refresh my memory. And I want to see maybe April had addressed this possibly, or Kathleen Otto, but it is just a critical time as you're typically trying to get things done before the weather turns. And we are a weather sensitive area for development and construction. And having it be within that tail end of that window time just adds on to complications and pushes projects or homes further into that window, causing more and can further kind of exhaust issues. So if at all possible, it would be great to push that time frame into the winter time frame, where things typically are slower as it relates to building permits and development projects where weather is not as agreeable to doing projects.
So two things. Building permits will not be affected as long as the plat's recorded during that time. The second part is the freeze is dictated to us from the assessor's office. It's actually recording that it's not allowing me to do. So you'd have to go through the assessor's office.
Understood. Thank you.
Okay, I think that was it for our agenda items. Moving on to public comment. Anyone? Okay, with that, I guess that's a wrap. And we will see you at our next meeting, which is October 5th, 2:30. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.